This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's your old friend Phil Pritchett here. How you doing out there, folks? We're coming to you live from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, to talk all things music, all things Phil, to dig through my iPod, to let you in on what's going on in the industry, in the past, and to offer you some guiding assistance as we navigate these perilous music waters. There's so much out there, folks. We're here to just filter some of it for you. Here to help me sift through the mire is the Fort Worth legend himself, my friend and fellow singer-songwriter, Kurt South. How you doing there, Kurt?
I'm ready to dig in the dirt.
Dig in the dirt. We're going to dig through the stuff, man. We're getting the hang of these podcasts here, folks. Thanks so much for listening. We have gotten your emails. Then we're going to answer a little fan mail. We have gotten a lot of fan mail. Inquiries about certain songs, little things about issues in music, that kind of thing. At the top of the show, we're going to talk, Kurt and I were talking in the last podcast about pricing. What do you charge for music? Do you charge for music? It's not expensive to make anymore or distribute, so do you charge? Can you still charge $10? Can you charge a dollar? Should it be free? Listening to you fans, the market. We'll discuss that here in the first segment. In our middle segment, always sort of a catch-all segment, we're going to talk about... What are we talking about, Kurt?
You're going to tell your story about
one regret.
You passed up on something that you should have taken advantage of.
People ask me, as all of us have in life, people sometimes say, man, do you have any regrets? And I am very grateful that I can... with a clear conscience, say absolutely not. I wouldn't do it all differently if I had to do it all again. However, I do have one glaring regret that we'll talk about in the middle segment. And then finally in the vault, P2's iPod. Me and Kurt were over on the wall there sifting through the vinyl record collection. Had a great young player, a great young artist in here whose record I'm producing, a guy named Zach Huckabee. Check him out, Zach Huckabee, down in Land Passes, Texas, plays around a lot. Man, he's got some good songs. His band was up here tracking. Not too familiar with the artist we're going to look at in the P2 Vault today. But we're going to take a look at... Is that the first album they ever made?
Yeah.
I think it is. Dire Straits, everybody. Some people write him off. The guy sings like Dylan. They write him off because of Money for Nothing with the pink headbands, wristbands, and all that kind of stuff in the MTV era. All valid concerns, but let me tell you something, my friends. If you're out there playing guitar, writing songs, and making records, and you're not fully versed on the greatness of Mark Knopfler and Dire Straits, we're going to point you in some directions here on the iPod.
You're going into battle unarmed.
If
you don't know Knopfler.
We're going to talk about tone and playing without a pick and all that good stuff. But back here to our pricing thing. Our last show we're talking about what should music cost, if anything at all. You've seen like Amazon. Man, they have a lot of records now, like $3.99 download. It's just getting cheaper and cheaper. The problem is, of course, no one buys records anymore. But man, more people are listening to music. More music than ever
before. More music is being consumed than ever. It's just how no one can really put their finger on hey, a large segment of the population is getting their music this way. Everybody has their own way of getting it.
Right.
Whether they're just streaming music all the time on the computer and not actually owning the music, kind of like Netflix for music.
Right.
Which there are a lot of sites out there like that. Rhapsody and Napster work kind of that way. Spotify works that way.
Right.
There are people who do iTunes only. Mm-hmm, even if they can get it for free somewhere else, screw it. My computer's set to iTunes. All music is imported through iTunes. They'd rather just buy it, pay a dollar a song. Some people do only P2P.
Yep.
They steal it all, which, is it really stealing?
If it's there for the taking, do you just take it? Well, it brings up an interesting point. One of the points we kind of, we just got back from lunch over at the Dixie House. Love you, Dixie House, right over here across the street on Lancaster.
Best chicken fried steak.
Oh, man. We're just saying, if you sound a little sluggish or you hear me nod off to sleep or something like that, please give me a little kick. It's just a big lunch setting in.
Good sweet tea also.
Great sweet tea, great chicken fried steak. But back on point here. We're talking about, is there, kind of an old business term, there's no money in the middle. Mm-hmm. And, man, I fight with, just like you say, you want to provide everything possible. We have CDs. We have downloads on P2Tunes. Each record for just $4. P2Tunes, what a great deal. You can also buy a drop card for $35. Download the whole catalog in one swoop, you know, which is even a lower price break than the P2Tunes. We also have CDs, Kurt. 3 for $20 at a show, or $8 off the website when you order.
I remember CDs.
And remember CDs? We have the gamut out there. It's also on iTunes, you know, for whatever their prices are. And, man, it comes in pretty evenly. And we also have free MP3. I mean, you can go to our website, and each record there's 3 or 4 songs that you can just click on and download for nothing. And they all seem to just be tapped, you know, digitally, so to speak, in various but predictable and incremental numbers, you know. And that kind of speaks to your point about how people consume music, and different people want different things.
Right. Yeah, without an industry standard on how to distribute, a guy like me or you is faced with what is the avenue? Is there one sure way that we need to try to push it? And there is no answer there.
That's right.
But the money in the middle is the curious point.
It is.
We've talked about having a big deluxe vinyl record with a CD included, you know, maybe 2 records set. With great artwork,
something,
poster.
Something any real fan is going to have to have.
A real souvenir.
And it's going to say, man, you know, it's $50. Or you're talking about charging a lot of money for something.
And then you have it also, if you just want to download it, download
it's just
files.
Free.
It's just free. But saying, hey, I've got this $8.99 CD.
If you don't want to do either of those, you can just have it for $6. It's
right.
Just kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
Who's in that category?
Who's in the just $6 category? That just $6 guy, he's just going to get it for free.
That's right. That's right. It's not. I think there's a valid point there. Of course, I'm a big fan of Seth Godin, the great blogger and marketer. Is it SethGodin.com? Anyway, check out Seth Godin on Google.
G-O-D-I-N.
He'll send you an email, a little blog once a day or so. Great little ideas about the future, the present. Writes a lot about music, a lot about marketing, and, man, real interesting. I just love reading his stuff. But there's a great interview with him. He was talking to actually a music convention, and he talks about he wrote a book called Tribes, which was a big-time bestseller, talking about building your tribe around your music
your product,
or whatever,
yeah.
you know, servicing your core, and which is what we all try to do. And maybe it was his first book. I can't remember the name of it. But his first big book he just gave away. He posted it online, one of the free book sites. You could read the book online or download it and read it absolutely free. And, man, it was a big hit, and everybody talked about it, and it was free and great, great, great. So Seth all of a sudden had this huge following of people who knew who he was and were familiar with his ideas and everything. Then after the book had been free for a long time, he says, a lot of people still wanted the book. He said, "Man, I didn't want to print books and all that." So I charged, and this was years ago, but it was $40 for a hardback book, $40. It wasn't a huge book. He said, man, that was a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a lot for a hardback.
But he just said instantly, a certain percentage of all those people who download for free, it was something like 300,000 people had read the book online. And then he says $40 and just, you know, 80,000 people just go, absolutely, send me the book, you crazy. And that's pretty eye-opening. You know, you're kind of like, well, if it's free, no one's going to buy it. But you kind of look, another to your point, no money in the middle, is the Radiohead example we talked about last time, their most recent record In Rainbows, where it was just posted for free with a tip jar, just a little box there. Hey, you can send us, you know, $10,000, or you can send us a dollar, whatever. You still get the record. Whatever it's worth to you. You set the value for whatever it's worth to you, you know. It was that, or you could buy it. And this was when it first got released. You could buy the vinyl, the product package, which was a poster, double vinyl album. I think there was a CD of the record was also in there in a little sleeve. Mm-hmm. You know, photos, lyrics, just, I mean, it was the quintessential fan, shrink-wrapped. Maybe it was the first few were autographed by the band, something like that.
Yeah.
For like $80. You know, you're like, that's a lot of money, but hey, it's free, or it's $80. And staying out of the middle. What do you think of that, Kurt?
Well, I think it makes sense. You think about in the world, think about department stores.
Mm-hmm.
You've just got Walmart, and you've got just a
Neiman's.
Nice high-end.
Yeah, you got
and that's really, you either fall in one of the, and I'll tell you the places who have suffered, at least in the way I see it, is like Sears.
The Fringe.
Yeah, they've kind of been in the, but Sears has kind of had to reinvent themselves to adapt to that, because now you have Target and Walmart occupying this end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Then you just have Neiman's down here on the other end.
Yeah.
And you know, used to be Sears was just the only game in town.
That's right.
So, man, I believe a lot in that. I think you give people the option of all or nothing, and don't, you know, like my dad's a minister, and he's always said, if you're always just treading in the middle, trying to please everyone, you're doing something wrong.
That's right.
He said, you gotta pick your sides. And I think dwelling on both ends of the extreme is a good idea.
You know, you look around in these, harsh economic times, but you read Walmart, you're like, or McDonald's is thriving, you know.
Yeah, they're booming.
And I go to my little St. Emilion's, very nice, small, expensive French restaurant, me and my wife here in town. I still got to call and get a reservation. Now, their numbers may be down some, but people still go there.
St. Emilion's, I'd like to see the contracts you're signing.
Well,
days.
You know. Man, yeah, it's big time stuff.
I can't afford that.
We only go there every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday you go to St. Emilion's? God.
I am a musician after all. Come on. But, you know, point being, the upper scale stays in business.
Sure.
The bottom scale stays in business. They start closing Bennigan's, Steak and Ale, Chili's. They're all gone. Chili's is hanging on. But the Fringe, where, and it's a little weird in apparel. I wonder how that works. Because I'm confused when I go into... I went into like Banana Republic the other day. Look at me. I'm not a shopper. What was I doing in there? I'm racking my brain. Anyway, I wander into Banana Republic, you know. I must look real lost when I come in the door of one of those places, because I'm just looking around, you know.
You're just overlooking at women's
clothing. I'm just in a daze.
They're calling mall security.
The person's just looking at me. Can I help you, sir? I'm just like, huh? You know, I'm wearing clothes that I've bought in thrift stores from, you know, whatever, and I've wandered into the wrong. I was shocked, though, how expensive it was and how nice the clothes were.
Yeah.
You know, I thought I still had a jungle theme, you know, like safari at the mall, you know, a couple of tusks at the front door. When was that, like 1985 or something?
Yeah. That was
I didn't know. I'm being silly. But the point is, it looks like they're trying to move more high-end.
Mm-hmm.
And you go into Target, and they've got more, like, hip stuff, you know? Like,
yeah.
You know, and I think what that is it squeezes the middle. The cheaper places are always trying to ramp up, and maybe the more expensive places like Del Frisco's will kind of, hey, well, now we offer a lunch menu.
Yeah.
They kind of come down. And it does start to squeeze it. You start going into Chili's and going, hey, man, we could go to Del Frisco's and eat a steak salad for $10 rather than having to come out here with the riffraff.
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with Chili's, but you know what I'm talking about. The fringe is difficult.
Yeah,
and,
it really is.
Maybe pricing your music is that way. Free. What does that say today? I'll give it a shot. I'll listen to it, or I don't have the money. It's free. Take it.
Yeah.
Or if you say, man, I love it. I want the lyrics. I want the poster. I want the raffle ticket in there for the contest, whatever the heck you got in there. You know, yeah, $50, man. You get a vinyl record, CD, everything. It's all in the package.
Right, right. I think we're already hitting on something that I think people already know. Maybe we're the last ones to realize.
Maybe so.
Maybe because coming from our perspective, where we're the ones trying to push our stuff and we're creating it, we're trying to get it out there, and maybe we haven't thought about it from the consumer's end as much. But you know, I've offered a lot of different products with my music before, in different formats, different price points, and man, if people like you, they will give you their money. Mm-hmm. They will pay.
That's right. Yeah.
Even if it's free. I mean, mm-hmm. I've had my CDs on my website for sale for $14, right next to where you can download the album for free. People are still buying the CDs. So I think from our end, we have to think more like the fan, the consumer, and you know,
I
go to John Hyatt's website and he's got this deluxe edition, just great product that's $60, I'm probably gonna buy it.
A used Kleenex in there or something.
Yeah, just
you're in there.
Just an old set of his Dr. Scholl insoles or something. I'm buying two of them.
There's an idea.
There's an old whiskey.
What's the guy's name? I shouldn't even bring it up because I don't have his name in front of me. Oh, he's been legendary here doing stuff like that. Doing all these goofy promotions. I think he's in L.A. Like, for $100, you know, you can buy my catalog. For $200, I'll come to your house and eat barbecue. For $500, you'll get in my car with me and some of the guys in this other band and we'll go hit the clubs. Oh, is it Josh Freeze? Is that right? No, that's another guy. Oh,
didn't he have backup quarterback for the Dolphins?
No, he had Bob Leftson sent me an email about him. He was
he does all these bizarre YouTube things, the commercials.
Yeah.
It might be Josh Freeze.
I thought it was Freeze, something Freeze. I think it's Josh Freeze, wasn't
he's
it?
Just, yeah, he's just got this
friends with the guys from Tool or something. He goes, man, we'll all go out partying, you know, or something.
Yeah.
Pretty funny stuff, pretty unique. Well, you know, I was always compelled with the pricing issue when I heard that Neil Young, our good friend, Neil, how you doing out there? Keep it up, man.
He called me last week, by the
way.
Yeah?
Yeah. What, did you take a message?
I'm not taking his calls.
I know it, man. Neil went on Letterman a while back, and he had put one of his new MP3s, new songs for free on his website.
Mm-hmm.
And his label had said, man, take it off. Because it had gotten downloaded like 4 million times. Something ridiculous. Like in a week.
Yeah.
It was amazing. He goes, yeah, so I had to take it off, Dave. And so anyway, they kind of joked about it. He was pissed and Letterman was laughing. It got me to thinking though, man. I was like, man, on 4 million downloads for one song in like a week? It was up for like 4 days or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so it poses a couple of questions. One, what if he had charged a dollar? What if it iTunes, okay? Just, hey, man, it's Neil's new song on iTunes. Well, he does that already.
He would have sold 30,000.
The answer is, how many people actually pay a dollar to download Neil Young's new single or care? Tens of thousands, maybe?
Maybe.
Not four. He wouldn't have $4 million.
He hadn't sold 4 million records
in
years and years and
so
years.
So tens of thousands of people maybe would download the new Neil Young song for a dollar. But what if Neil on Letterman said, hey, America and the world, tonight at midnight, me, Neil Young, I will put my new album, Living with War, or whatever it was at the time, up on
the worst album made in the last
20 years.
My wife bought it for me. It's a coaster in my office now.
Okay.
It sucks.
All right. Sorry, Neil. Sorry. Keep it up, though, man.
Love Harvest, though. Love
Harvest. Harvest was great. After the Gold Rush, more of that. Anyway, it posed the question, well, what if he had said, hey, my new record will be up, all 15, 16 songs of it on my website, for the grand price of $3. Well, I tell you what, man, that gets your mind going a little bit because you're like, well, That's a lot of songs for just $3. People wouldn't pay a dollar for one song, but how many of those 4 million people who downloaded one song for free would pay $3 for an entire Neil Young album? Not 4 million.
About a half million, though.
But a half million. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You know, a million? Several, a few hundred thousand? And at this point, you're like, man, Neil Young would have millions. Not that he needs money, but, you know, I mean, he would have...
He'd have a couple million dollars
in his checking account in a couple of days. And you're just... I'm always shocked when I read that some artist has re-upped their deal with a label or something. I'm just like, man... I think Jack Johnson, of course, Radiohead, guys like that, are starting not to. I'm like, man, if I was those guys, if I had that kind of exposure, I could get on, you know, shows and I could get some advertising, and you just say, hey, tonight at midnight, you know, whatever, my new record will go up on
for
the
a
Sunday,
dollar,
for $2,
you have $1 million.
$2, man, 12 songs, check it out, or free. There's a little tip jar deal. Send me money if you want, whatever, or $80 for the vinyl. As long as you're not cutting in the label, the middleman there, you just don't need. A label telling you, but of course these guys are in debt to the labels because they did exist. They did benefit from that early exposure. I guess that's part of it.
Yeah, that's probably part of the deal. And but you know, I always wonder about a guy like Ryan Adams, who's now, you know, he says he's retiring from music and all that, and he finished his.
He and Joaquin Phoenix,
yeah,
are going to start a band or something.
He finished his deal with Lost Highway Records, which is always a tenuous relationship at best.
Yeah,
man, if he just says, "I'm putting out my music myself,"
online,
I'm putting out
an album a week for,
man,
$4.
He would just sit there and be counting money all week long.
Man, I wonder if people get tired of it, if the quality... I don't know.
I mean, he's put out a bunch of crappy records, though, alongside his great records, and they all sold the same amount.
Yeah, that's right,
There's not much play in his sales numbers. They all kind of sell about 120,000, 130,000 each time he puts something out.
Mm-hmm.
Man, he's not making that much. I've heard him say a dozen times in interviews, I don't make money off the albums I sell, the label does.
Mm-hmm.
So, what... But you make.
I wonder if he could package all of everything he's ever recorded together, which would be 1,000 songs or more.
You know. 72 albums in 4 years.
He just says, you can download it off my website, my whole catalog for $35.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder what that would produce. Or is that too fringe? Is that too in the middle? I'd do that with the drop cards, $35, but I'm kind of like, you know, a lot of people already have this stuff, and a newbie is just going to download some free stuff.
Right, right.
Maybe one $4.
Man, I think...
Comes alive and see what they think.
I think... Well, I don't know. I'll tell you where the middle is getting squeezed now. The other day I was on MySpace.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the whole MySpace music thing now.
Yeah. Oh,
Dierks
yeah.
Bentley's new album, along with a lot of other music.
$3.99. Is it still, though? I thought it was just opening week or something.
I don't know.
I remember seeing
that. See, that just showed the middle is getting squeezed again.
Yeah.
I think it needs to be, man, my new album is up either for free or a dollar or two.
$200. No.
Or you can buy this physical product that has a lot of extras.
I'll show up at your house with the album and make you lunch.
By the way, here's the offer. Email me, kurtsouth@att.net.
Wait a minute. Uh-oh. What is this?
$1,000. For
$1,000. For $1,000, what?
I will come to your house.
Oh, no.
If you live within 3 hours. I will come to your house.
What? Clean your bathroom.
I will make dinner for you and your family. I'll clean the kitchen, and then after dinner, I will play you play for an hour.
Play for an hour.
$1,000 offers on the table.
Kurt at what?
KurtSouth@att.net.
KurtSouth@att.net. There it is, folks.
Let me hear from you.
You know, back when the internet was in its infancy, 1998, so, you know, people had it, but it was still, we had a website, a real active guy, John Gray, who was a... built our early websites and all that kind of
PhilPritchett.org.
Yeah, when I was learning about all this stuff. We had an online contest. I was getting rid of my old Suburban. Mom's old Suburban. It was kind of run down. I'd taken it to college, and I'd taken on the road with the band for a long time. And we had a contest. I've kind of forgotten about this. And we said, hey, fans. This was, you know, we're riding high after Phil Comes Alive around this era. You know, we're getting ready to go to Nashville to record Suburban Legends. So we were feeling pretty, like we had some fans. We said, look, this is an open auction. The winner gets a show in their house and my Suburban. And we will show up to the gig, show up to your house, get out with our gear, play a show, and we leave you the keys at the end of the night.
How did you get home if you left your Suburban?
Well, we'd have to figure that out. But it was a way, and I thought, man, you know, maybe we get, I don't know, a couple $1,000, something we'd play a party for, and get rid of the car or whatever. I mean, it wasn't, cause it was kind of old and beat up and stuff like that. So, man, about 3 weeks into it, man, our highest offer was like $500. And, it was stressful. Cause we were going to be getting rid of this car. We were going to have a party, you know, something like that. But we ended up getting a bid and, for about maybe $1,000 or something like that. Ended up doing it, for a kind of friend, you know, and not really a distant fan, you know. Cause we started thinking, man, what if somebody from out of state wins or something? So a guy in Austin ended up doing it. He was a friend of the band's and we played there and, he got the car. So, that was it, man. The contest. No telling what you can do in this day and age, though, Kurt. Kurt has thrown it out there. $1,000 will come to your house. If this works, and hear me now, if this works, that's my new stunt. Although I'm going to be $5,000 for lunch with Phil, you know, Maria standing on your coffee table.
That's it.
What
all right,
think?
People.
All you need is one guy. Like I say, stay out of the middle.
Stay out of
$100. Anywhere in the world, folks. There you go. Phil at philprisha.com. All right. Well, that's a little.
Specialize in pork chops. So if you like pork chops,
that is. We basically turned our careers musicians. Not us, but some of these guys like the Freeze got these goofy things. It's kind of like interactive reality TV is what it is.
Yeah.
What will people do for money?
Right.
You know, I'll dump roaches on my head. I'll eat a handful of caterpillars. You know, for $100,000, or would you do it for $50,000? Would you do it for $100? You know, you really find out what people want to do. I don't know what that says about our society, but. You know, you judge for yourself. Well, coming up in our next segment here, we are going to recount one regret I have in this whole entire business, the one regret. Stick around, we'll talk about it next.
Are the women beautiful there?
Are they?
Please, I cannot in good conscience describe the things that they said they would do to me. You reach the threshold, pay the cover, but a familiar.
Welcome back, everybody. Phil Pritchett here in Trinidad World Recording Studios in Fort Worth, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. With me is my good friend, singer-songwriter Kurt South. How you doing, Kurt?
I'm well.
We've been talking today about pricing and all this kinds of issues that go with putting music online today, digital music, what to charge. We're going to take a little break from that here in this segment here. As I revisit a moment that I've lived to regret every passing day of my life since. I don't have any regrets in this business. Of course, a lot of things went right. A lot of things went wrong. You get what you get. I don't know. I think like most people, you just kind of take the good with the bad. And I wouldn't change anything that I've done. I always did the best I could do. And I really believe that about everything I've done in music or in my life, except for one thing, and that was, I think it was probably 1999 or so, Doug Holm on the bass and Keith Robinson on drums. Both good athletes. Doug and I played on a softball team in Austin together. Good athlete. Keith was a good kind of a basketball guy, a rangy sort of athletic guys, so and big sports fans, both of them. Keith, a big hockey fan. Doug, a huge college sports fan. He went to Texas. He was a big Longhorn fan. So, and, you know, I'd played a lot of sports my whole life, and we were driving from Lubbock, Texas. I think we'd played some festival out there. Anyway, we were driving all from Lubbock straight to Waco, and it was probably on a Thursday. And so we were passing through De Leon, Texas, a little town there. I think it's around like Hico, kind of that area.
Just west of Stephenville.
Yeah, kind of out that direction. I'm trying to think what...
Right off of Highway 16.
Is that what we would have been taking from Lubbock? We'd have been kind of weaving straight to Waco from Lubbock. You'd be going
You were probably went down through there and then jumped on Highway 6 around Clifton.
Right. That's right. It was right around in there.
Yeah.
I remember it was De Leon. So we pull into
Went right through Hico, yeah.
We're going to play Scruffy Murphy's, a club in Waco on a Spate that we played a lot in those days. Played it all the time, about once a month. So we went in there. We're driving through, stopped in De Leon to go into this convenience store, use the restroom. And it says, restroom's out of order. So I kind of go, you know. So I go across the street to this other. I didn't move the car. It was filling up with gas. Walked across the street. Went to this other convenience store. So I'm coming back, so I got to cross the street again to get back to the Suburban, and this school bus pulls up, you know, and just stops right in front of me. I'm standing on the curb. I think they're going to let some kids out. The door opens. There's this there's this man standing there with the coach's hat on, like the coach's shorts, like with the two buttons, you know, the little
polyester shorts.
Yeah, with the whistle. I mean, a coach. If you ask what a coach looked like, this was, hey, he's standing there, and he just says, you play nose guard? And all of a sudden there's this laughter in the whole back of the bus. There's all these kids dying laughing. And I'm like, what? He goes, you play nose guard? He said, we got a game here right down the road tonight. We've had some eligibility. We've lost some of our players, and we're not going to be able to field the team. Would you mind, you know, suiting up? And no one will know, you know. Just, and I'm thinking about my gig, and it was happening kind of fast. All these kids were laughing, but this guy looked pretty serious. But I didn't know if it was a joke or I kind of went, I said, man, we're going to Waco. I'm in a band or something, you know. And the guy, he throws up his hands in dramatic fashion and kind of turns back to the bus and like, I tried or something. And everybody was started clapping on the bus, like, yay, coach, or something. And I was like, what's going on here? And it wasn't a lot of kids, and they looked like they were like freshmen.
It's probably six-man football.
Well, no, don't the freshmen play, like, usually on Thursday nights or something?
Yeah,
the JV plays.
Yeah.
Or freshmen play Wednesday night. And
JV usually play on Thursday.
JV Thursday night. It might have been like a JV high school team, something like that. So they drive off. Well, I tell this story to Doug and Keith, they were in the, they weren't with me. I said, man, some guys asked me if I wanted to go play. And dude, they were just, their eyes just lit up. And you know what? As I sat there telling the story and the reality set in, I regretted not just going with it. I mean, I played some show that night that I'd played a million times and would play a million times again. And I tell you what, man, I started cursing at high volume on the way to Waco. We considered for a time turning around and trying to find the game. And because the guys were like, dude, do you think they'd suit us up? Could we play? I could play special teams, you know. And we just, and I'm not telling you, especially with those two guys, every day we got in the van for the next several years playing shows, we would just openly fantasize about what possibilities that night could have brought. You know, with all the usual, you know, rock and roll and the beer and the driving and the bars. You say, man, this one time we called in sick to a gig. Yeah, what for? We get on this. They said, you play nose guard. Phil just says, yes. I would do it now. Because, you know, back then I was trying to impress the club or something. You know what I mean? I thought I had something to prove.
Oh, yeah.
Now
yeah.
I got nothing to prove. I would have suited it up, man. And I tell you what, I lay in bed awake at night sometimes, visualizing, you know, doing the calisthenics out on the, before the, just with my helmet on, daring not to take my helmet off. You know, I kind of had a scruffy beard. You know, I don't want to look.
What would happen if you'd been caught, though? Would there be some sort of legal ramifications?
I don't know.
I'd have gotten
coverage. I would have gotten some coverage and press.
Local musician.
Dude, we were sick. We were sick about it. I mean, because we were just fans. It was like, dude, Man, some freshman kid, man, he couldn't keep me off the back of the quarterback, man. That coach, man, I'd convince him to put me in a defensive end, man. I'd come around the corner. Boom.
Just be kicking.
Holmes just like, you know what? Be a good play, man. You come around the corner. And then I just blitz up the middle, man. Middle linebacker. Man, he kidding me? Some 90. I'd be the biggest guy out there. You know, Doug is pretty, he went huge, but, you know, for a high school kid, sure. Fantasized about it. I was like, man, what if I picked off a pass? What if the game was tight? You know, what if I get in the game, some guy gets hurt, and I pick one off, and I run it back for the winning score, man? And I'm just reliving a life I had never lived. For the first time. And just, man, there's the party afterward, right? Oh, there's a party. Of course there's a party. Of course. Then we all just keep it going.
You're having to buy beer for everybody.
We go to the ranch party, dude. They got the caddy like, man, you're the guy. Oh, dude, we were idiots. Ridiculous. Not a day goes by, or I don't see a school bus or go by some little JV field. And I dream, Kurt. My stomach turns, my jaw clenches, and I just think to myself about what might have been. That right now, there could be a 10-year-old newspaper out there with me on the cover, just going over the goal line, just hoisting the ball, you know, just huge upset, mystery man, you know, picks off game-winning pass or something, you know.
28-year-old with stubble.
Oh!
Wins
turns
the
out
game
he was a
for DeLeon
turns
JV.
Out. He was a 27-year-old man that they picked up outside the All-Subs. It was not cleared to play. It'd be a scandal. Can you? Oh, that'd have been great.
That would have been great.
See, back in those days, though, I didn't want to break the rules. You know, I'm still that way. I just play it close to the chest. You know, I mind my own business. I stay out where I'm. Oh, man, I've missed a huge opportunity there.
You did.
I missed a huge opportunity. Don't you agree?
Man, especially if your band could have gotten involved.
Oh, man, can you imagine?
If they could have gotten on the field.
Well, that'd been my deal. It'd have been like free agency.
Peter and the full band just goes out there and kicks some 15-year-old ass.
I should have walked on the bus and said, all right, we'll play. But here's the conditions. First of all, I get to start, and I get to play defense. I get to play wherever I want. I'm just roving. And the other thing is we get to suit up Doug and Keith to be out there too. And we're starting also. Unless we decide in the middle of the game we want to play offense, then we'll play offense. I set the rules. Yeah, I'd be like Drew Rosenhaus, you know, like a sports agent.
Super agent.
Go in there, just mesmerize these kids with my charm, my charisma, with my leadership, and man, you know, next thing you know, dude, I'm on that bus before the game in my pads.
Giving the speech.
Dude, just giving the Gene Hackman Hoosier speech.
Yeah.
Just, my book, we're going to be winners. Just get them. And everybody just at the end of the whole thing, I have the black streaks kind of running down my cheeks, you know, the sweaty, you know,
just
I'm just
the
sweaty.
Eye black everywhere.
Yeah, maybe I'm dinged up a little bit. I got some bruises on the arm. You know, the cheerleaders just, you know, kind of looking at me like, who is that man? You know, kind of like the gunfighter. He'd come into town, nobody knew who he was. And he picks off the pass, and the lights are going down Saturday night, you know, weekend night. And I just sort of, you know, like Mean Joe Green in the old Coke commercial. You know how he goes down the tunnel. Yeah, with the jersey. And that could have been me, Sal. Just kind of, no one knows. We never got his name. You know, he just came in here, and he fired up this team. And he went out there on the field, and he backed it all up. And when it got to crunch time, we knew he was the guy to have out there. And by God, he came through. And that's it. And then I could go on and play gigs the rest of my life. But just let me have that moment.
And after the game, after you've scored the winning touchdown,
yeah,
you pick off a pass, just recruiters from NAIA and NC2A schools.
Oh, you know, that was
just
part of the deal.
We want to talk to that guy. Is he orally committed to anywhere?
Dude, that guy has a maturity and a feel for the game wise beyond his years. Yeah, we thought maybe there's some scouts here, you know, from a UT, a couple of Notre Dame guys in the, just a guy out there leading. And man, you know, just in a few hours, I could have transformed the lives
into a blue chip recruit
of a town. Yeah, I could have. I mean, it sounds like a Michael J. Fox movie or something, kind of like a Doc Hollywood meets Hoosiers, you know, or something like that.
Did you just reference Doc Hollywood?
Doc Hollywood on the show. Just to where a kind of a big city guy goes into the small town, and it takes a while for the charm to kind of rub off on him, you know?
Yeah.
But by the end of that, man, I would have been changed. I would have been changed. Not only had I inspired this team in this town, and won the game and just gone back to my life and theirs and them to theirs, we both would have. It'd have been a Hollywood story, man.
Forget Everyone would
Rudy,
have come out better for it.
Forget Rudy and who's. This would have been the sports moment of all time. Any screenwriter out there, I'll sell you the story. Write me. I'll give it all to you. I've got it all mapped out in my mind through aggravating hours of thinking about what could have been. Well, that is my biggest regret of my entire music career. It really had nothing to do with music. It would have just had to have simply done with quitting music for that night and inspiring the town of De Leon, Texas. If you're listening in De Leon, I'm sorry I let you down. I won't next time.
We have some big fans from De Leon,
actually.
We
do have De Leon. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, they're everywhere. Just know this. Phil Pritchett was once a part of you, and he still is. A part of you has never left him, let me tell you. Well, in our next segment, we're going to get into the P2'd iPod, Kurt. Dire Straits, Knopfler, Tone, Sultans of Swing, coming up. Welcome back, fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast from Fort Worth, Texas, Trinidad World Recording Studios. With me is my good man, Kurt South. Hello, Curtis.
Hello, Phil.
Well, at this segment of the show, we always like to dig through the vinyl records on the wall, scroll through the iPod, browse through some of my many gigantic Mac computers here and look for stuff that shows up. I look for things that look like they've been played a lot. You know, of course, at iTunes, you get the numbers of plays. I can tell by that or the wear and tear on a vinyl record sleeve. And if something kind of shows up, you know, something that has no doubt been played very often, we take particular interest in. Yeah, Zach Huckabee, I was talking about him earlier, young singer-songwriter, guitar player from Land Pass, is in here recording. He had some elements of this record in some of his songs, some mm-hmm. of his playing. I was surprised he didn't know a whole lot about Dire Straits. And I said, man, are you real familiar with Dire Straits? He was like, man, kind of. That's another, money for nothing. Yeah, that's what everybody says. Huge, huge hit, huge song of the MTV era.
Might have been the song of the 80s, man.
Maybe so. I mean, that was just gigantic. The video at the computer, I mean, it was just a... And really, Brothers in Arms, that album, was the first digital record. Did you know that?
Yeah, that's right.
First digitally recorded album. They probably used the 8-at tapes, I'm assuming. Or maybe they still did it on kind of the video style digital tape. It's probably 8-at. Anyway, Brothers in Arms, that was the huge Dire Straits, 1984, I think it was. But this was their very first record. It's just simply called Dire Straits. They were a band in England, and I was interested in reading their Wikipedia page that they would request that the engineer turn their sound down when they were playing in a pub. So that people could talk comfortably while the band was playing. And that comes through on this record. You're in the room with these guys.
Yeah.
Very soulful, not loud. They kind of cast themselves as anti-arena rock, which is ironic considering that's kind of where they ended up.
Right.
With money and nothing. But originally they were, this was the 70s. This would have been, 1976, 77, I think when they formed in 77. And they made this record for £12,000. How many dollars is that?
About 16,000 U.S. Well, back dollars.
Then, it's like double that now, isn't it? Our worthless U.S. dollars.
Yeah,
like
I don't know.
Grand.
In a week, it'll be...
Yeah, who knows? So,
in a week, that'll be about 2,000 U.S. dollars.
Yeah. Pick Withers on drums. John Ilsley on bass.
Pick
David
Withers.
David Knopfler.
What a great British name, Pick Withers.
I wonder
Withers.
If he's his, I'm sure he's his brother or cousin. David Knopfler, then you got Mark Knopfler. Of course, the leader, Mark Knopfler, vocals, rhythm, lead guitars. Man, a guitar player extraordinaire. Back in these days, of course, he's been playing like a, always playing like a Les Paul now. He did that great new song with Emmylou Harris a year or
did
so ago.
Did a whole
ago.
Record. Yeah, that was a
All
great.
All the Road Running, which is a really good album.
Yeah.
And that great, great single, This Is Us.
Yes.
So that's Mark Knopfler, but this is where it started. Dire Straits, 1978, their first record. Very soulful, down home. He's got a very kind of Dylan-esque kind of a voice.
Yeah,
real very, understated.
Very blues-influenced
yeah,
guitar player.
Really
very
great.
Blue, he had a very a country blues thing, very clean. Mark Knopfler's one of the guitar players. You could blindfold me and put me in a room with 100 guitar players. I could tell you Mark Knopfler within half a second.
So you would know then.
Absolutely.
You would know then, of course, that he played on Slow Train Coming,
yes.
The great Dylan record.
Dylan.
And this was around this era here, kind of late 70s. Man, it kicks off with a Down to the Waterline great song. But then it follows it up. Really my favorite on the whole record, if you don't count Sultans of Swing, which is a huge hit. But on this record, Water of Love. Dobro part.
Yeah.
And a great chorus, just when it picks up. But there ain't no water here to be found. Love the six-blade knife. It's kind of got the same kind of feel mm-hmm. to it. Great song. Southbound again, just a little rocker.
It's funny how a British band like them, like many other British bands, are able to capture the sound and the essence like Muscle Shoals and Memphis.
Yeah, very
and they'd
pure.
Probably never even been to those places when they made that album.
Yeah.
They were able to channel that sound so well.
They just knew it and they dug through it maybe as much as anybody.
Well, they'd listen to all the old Otis Redding albums
yeah.
and Aretha Franklin, all that, the old soul and R&B music influenced the British pub scene so heavily back
yeah.
in the 70s. A lot of those bands were able to channel it as well as anybody.
Well, you know, on classic rock radio growing up, it was ubiquitous Sultans of Swing.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, it's just an all-time great anthem. Man, but it's a song you take for granted because you heard it so many times. But, man, I found myself as I started my own band, when that song, I didn't really know much about Dire Straits besides Money for Nothing and but this old Sultans of Swing would come on the radio, and I found myself just mesmerized by the guitar playing on that track. And you know what? In all my listening and playing and watching other people and listening to music and having people tell me this guy's great and this guy's great and you gotta listen to the solo on this song and something, nothing sounds quite like him playing the solo on Sultans of Swing.
No.
And I've seen him on... TV shows and stuff. He plays the Strat, plugged straight into just a like a Princeton amp or something.
Mm-hmm.
Very clean, no effects really. Maybe a little
reverb,
a chorus occasionally or something like that. But no drive. It's not a heavy. They stayed true in these early years to sort of that anti-arena band thing. You know, just playing very conversational music that relied on tone and precision. He doesn't play with a pick. You know, so he's got this quick. He plays with his thumb and his fingers, and not really with the nail. It's not a bright picking sound. It's kind of a flesh tone,
yeah,
plucking, strumming kind of sound. He once said that he stole all of his guitar playing from Richard Thompson. Mm-hmm. Of course, some Texas music fans would know that. Reckless Kelly did the great 1952 Vincent Black Lightning. Red Mass at the Jeans! You know. Awesome song. I was a little offended when that song came out, though. Their version of it, quite frankly. Because that has always been one of my favorite songs.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
And I had to deal with every, Johnny Come Lately... teenage punks. Hey, man, you like that Reckless Kelly song about the motorcycle? I'm like, come on, man.
Please.
But they did a good version of it. They did a good job.
They did.
And I know they did some touring with Richard Thompson, so they probably had discovered that song anew. You'd been around him a lot. Great song. Knopfler, man. Sultans of Swing solo. Man, go back and check it out. There's a couple different sections in it. One at the end, but really the run there in the middle of the song, I want to say. It's just phenomenal, and to this day when it comes on, I kind of have to turn up the radio. There's nothing background about it. It's riveting, man.
It hasn't come to beat me down the way most big classic rock hits, you know. Like, if I hear Free Bird or More Than a Feeling or Honky Tonk Women one more time, I'll start cutting myself.
Yeah,
but
I know.
Man, Sultans of Swing, every time it comes on, it still sounds like it.
It does.
Just hearing it for the first time.
You know, that was by far the biggest hit on this album.
Yeah.
It kind of really broke them through. But all the songs are like that. That same kind of style of playing, that just clean strat tone, you know, playing in between the pickups, between the, you know, the
kind
middle,
of the quacky
middle and back
tone.
Yeah.
And
it's just that tone. You go to a Guitar Center, pick up a Strat, and mess with those pickups and play in straight, and you'll hit that dire straight. There's really not much to it.
I think of the intro to Sweet Home Alabama, the dun dun dun.
Yeah.
That gives you kind of an idea of that tone, because that's
gurgling,
that same tone.
Chimey kind of sound.
Yeah.
But Knopfler's a master, man. Just a master, and the drummer and the bass, everything about this band was really great. And I think it does serve, we talked about, I think it was Southern Accents on a previous mm-hmm. Tom Petty record, on a previous podcast, how he, you know, was at moments on that record overtaken by 80s style production.
80s largesse.
Largesse.
Yes.
Straits does not suffer from that here. Of course, they're not in the 80s quite yet. They're still in 1977.
Yet. They're still fighting disco there.
They're
so
fighting
they're
disco.
Pure.
And man, there's so much to be said. It gets said on this show so many times. If you can resist the temptation to throw in with the effects of the day, be that the gargantuan drum sounds or just the rectified huge guitar tones,
mm-hmm.
the ultra compressed vocals, overdone synthesizers,
horns,
drum machines. If you get heavily into horns and effects, you're kind of carving a tombstone for yourself 10 years from now.
Yes.
I think this record's a good indication of that, of just some guys, very pure toned, everything from the drums to the dobros, clean guitar tone, bass, and a vocal. And it still sounds great when it comes on the radio today. That is Dire Straits, their self-titled debut. It was made before Warner Brothers actually heard it and picked it up and released it, followed by Communique, I think that's how you say it, their second record. Then their third record, Making Movies, great album. Romeo and Juliet, Skate Away.
Skate Away, yeah.
Very, very similar to this record, though.
Yeah.
Really didn't change their sound a whole lot.
Really, Brothers in Arms is where they really departed and kind of went off into new territory.
Walk of Life.
Yeah, and became big pop stars of the day.
Yeah, they did. And toured arenas with headbands and... and
Windex blue
sweat
sport
gear.
Coats.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
Athletic gear. Mixed
well, I tell you though, on Brothers of Brothers in Arms, though, man, I love the song Brothers in Arms itself.
Yeah.
And then
Twisting by the Pool.
Yeah. Is that on that?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The other one was. Man, you're so far away yeah. from me. Wow, wow, wow. You're so,
so far.
I just can't. That's a great song.
Yeah, it
man.
Is. Awesome.
80s or no. Very 80s, but it, you know.
He started getting into
when you hear
some
it
more.
Kick on, when you hear that song kick on, you just envision Anthony Michael Hall and John Cusack going to the mall. Or so, you know, yeah. I don't know if it was ever actually used in a movie.
Just
but
Emilio Estevez just putting on a sweatband.
Just
stuff and
looking longingly at Jennifer Grey through a crowd or something like that.
Just Elizabeth Shue getting out of a pool.
Boy, speaking of 80s movies, me and the kids were home for spring break, you know, last week. You know, my oldest two are 11 and 8. And, man, they want to rent movies, but they're always going for the High School Musical stuff we've seen a million times, which are great. But I'm always trying to pull out a gem from the vault, the movie vault.
Porky's.
Yeah, right. Well, you forget how foul-mouthed some of those early movies
yeah.
Even like
oh, yeah.
Ferris Bueller and The Great Outdoors, I struck out on those. I got some ire, some harsh glances from...
from the mother.
Well, you know, she thought it was funny. She's pretty laid back about that kind of stuff. But I was mad about it. I was like, God, I didn't remember there were so many just... You know, four-letter words in this film. So, whatever. The kids are like, oh, Dad, we hear that anyway. Like, well, let me tell you, though. I wouldn't pull off The Karate Kid. Now, I couldn't remember how violent it was. I didn't know. I mean, there's some fighting. Some would upset the kids. Because, you know, then they come sleep in my bed, you know. That's no good. But, man, we got in there. Karate Kid. Let me tell you what, man. Pretty suitable. You got a few words in there. Some violence, some fight scenes. But, man, overall, pretty, pretty good stuff.
Really?
80s, The Karate Kid, Miyagi, Ralph Macchio, dude, fighting the big fight. Of course, my kids, you got to remember, they've never seen a movie like that.
Yeah,
they
that's
don't
true.
See it. They don't see it coming. They're like, why are you making him wash the car? The old man is just...
Wax on, wax off.
He just wants to do his chores. Of course, I just play it up. I'm just shrugging, going, yeah, man, what's going on? I thought this movie was called The Karate Kid. What's happening? And then, dude, that scene where Miyagi, you know, just show me sand the floor, you know what I mean? Dude, my girls, I mean, just light up. Oh my gosh, he's been teaching him karate the whole time. Dude, I'm like, man, he's a genius, Miyagi. You know, great stuff, man.
So when your
boy gets a little bit older and you don't know what to rent, and you don't want to watch, you know, The Princess Diaries. I guess your boy wouldn't be into that.
No.
What would he be into?
Well, right now he's really into karate stuff, and I guess he picked it up at preschool.
Yeah.
But he'll come up to me and go, "I want to play karate games."
Yeah.
And he knows some moves, and we'll sit there and just spar. And actually, I have a cut on my chin.
Yeah, I saw that when you walked in here.
I got that yesterday doing karate games with
you
him.
You need some help back there at the house?
He just reached up and clawed me and kicked me in the balls.
Jeez.
He's already calling me out to fight at age 3.
You need to teach him to do that move that Miyagi does where he stands on the stump, does the final leg kick.
Yeah.
Get out
there
on the beach. Well, that is some Dire Straits talk in the vault, morphing into a little Karate Kid there at the end. Talking about the 70s, the 80s, man. Dire Straits, Mark Knopfler, great stuff. Check it out. It's all on iTunes. Kurt South's music is all on iTunes. Phil Pritchett. Music all on iTunes. Download away, man. It all comes to us. We appreciate it so much. Go to philpritchett.com. You can download stuff at p2tunes.com for just $4 a piece. Email us, phil@philpritchett.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Kurt, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We will see you again next week. And subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It's absolutely free. Email us your comments. Let us know you're listening out there. Have a good week. We'll see you this time next week, and take care.